Welcome to the China Meter Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Fulton, a non-resident senior fellow at the Atlanta Council and a political scientist at Zayed University in Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates. When mapping out the season's episodes, I was looking at October for a show on China in the Israel-Palestine dispute. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had been expected to visit Beijing that month, and after China's role in the Saudi-Iran rapprochement earlier this year, there were reports that it might try its hand at mediation in the Middle East's most intractable conflict. The horrific Hamas attack on October 7th and the resulting war has clearly upended all of that. Dr. Gedalia Aftermann is here to tell us more about the China-Israel relationship and how Israelis are thinking about China these days. Gedalia is the head of the Asia Policy Program at Abba Eban Institute for Diplomacy and Foreign Relations at Reichman University. He previously served as a diplomat at the Australian Embassy in Beijing, focused on China's foreign policy and international security. Gedalia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jonathan. Happy to be here.
Yeah, happy you could join us. So can we start just with a brief overview of China's relations with Israel and Palestine before October 7th? We know that Mahmoud Abbas was in Beijing in June, and like I just said, Prime Minister Netanyahu is expected to be there in October. What was the trajectory of China-Israel-Palestine looking like before this attack?
So just to take a few steps backwards, traditionally China has been supportive of Palestine, has always voted in the UN with the Palestinians, with the Arabs and the Arab-Israeli conflict. China recognized Palestine before it did Israel. But as the relationship with Israel became stronger, as the economic relationship with Israel became stronger, it seemed very clear that Israel became the more important partner in this triangle. And China, while it talked a lot about the Palestinian cause, that didn't have much substance. Over the years, we've seen a few peace plans and peace proposals put forward by the Chinese, including by Xi Jinping himself, but always the feeling was that it was more lip service than substance. If we're moving forward to the last few years, then the relationship between Israel and China has become much stronger economically. China saw Israel as an important source of technology, of innovation. Chinese companies are involved in some of Israel's most important infrastructure projects. 2022 was a record year in Israel-China trade, reaching $21 billion U.S. dollars, very close, by the way, to the trade levels between Israel and the U.S., which I think is quite interesting. As you mentioned, following their rapprochement in March between Iran and Saudi Arabia, which China brokered, there was a feeling in Israel that maybe something political can be done with China in the region. You mentioned that China tried to push itself as a mediator in the Israel-Palestinian conflict. That wasn't something that Israel took seriously, but I think Israel maybe thought a little bit more seriously about China playing a role with other players in the region, for example, Saudi Arabia. Mahmoud Abbas visited Beijing in June, and that was a very symbolic visit, not a lot of substance, mainly focused on positioning China in the region. And positioning China as a possible mediator. Another issue that comes, that's important when we're talking about China's roles in the Middle East is getting legitimacy for its policies in Xinjiang. And we saw Mahmoud Abbas come out publicly while in Beijing in support of China's positions and policies in Xinjiang. Netanyahu, who is the father of Israel's Look East policies, Look East strategy was meant to come to Beijing in October. This visit was canceled because of the war. But the idea was that we'll see perhaps an upgrade in the economic relationship and perhaps talk about regional cooperation between Israel and China. One issue I should mention just very briefly is the issue of the impact of superpower competition on the Israel-China relationship. So the U.S. has always been an important actor in the Israel-China relationship and has a lot to do with shaping it. And over the last few years, as tensions grew between the U.S. and China, we've seen that shaping the relationship between Israel and China as well. The U.S. has put a lot of pressure on Israel to limit its relationship with China, especially when it comes to investment in technology, especially when it comes to infrastructure. And we've seen China gradually increase its pressure and its criticism of Israel over the Palestinian issue, basically using it as an instrument to attack the United States.
There's a lot of really interesting stuff in that. I mean, the last point you made, I guess the whole point you're making about competition between China and the U.S., I mean, when you're describing this set of relationships, this triangle, as you put it, there was nothing in there about, you know, meaningful connections historically or in terms of interest between China and Israel or China and Palestine. It sounded pretty instrumental in a lot of this.
Absolutely. I think when China thinks about the Israel-Palestine conflict, it doesn't think about the Israelis or the Palestinians. It either thinks about its position in the region, in the Middle East, or about its relationship with the United States.
Yeah, so I was thinking the last time I was in Israel, I was talking to some folks who are thinking a lot about China. And as you know, China has this strategic partnership diplomacy that it uses. And Israel has a very unusual designation. You're not a comprehensive strategic partner or a strategic partner. It's an innovative strategic partner?
Yeah. Right.
And that was signed, in 17, right?
Yes. So you can see here again, if you're thinking about the parallels between superpower competition, the China-U.S. relationship, and the Israel-China relationship, so you see that as the pressures, the tensions grow between China and the U.S., especially on technology, suddenly Israel emerges in Chinese eyes as a very important partner. In 2018 was a record year in terms of Chinese investment in Israeli technology. So China recognized Israel as an alternative source of technology as doors were closing in the U.S. and in the West.
One of the things that struck me when I was in Tel Aviv last fall, I guess, is that technological relationship was described in a lot more nuance than I usually hear. You know, like on the one hand, a lot of Israelis were saying, we're kind of competitors in this field. Like in much of the Middle East, China's seen as, you know, on the supply side of tech, you know, whereas and these countries are mostly on the consumer side. You know, that's the relationship with China, whereas Israel is also on the supply side. So there's a bit of a competition there in terms of, you know, you're both doing the similar things. And because of that, the Israelis I spoke with said that there was some concern, you know, that they were worried about protecting their IP, that, you know, working closely with China in a lot of technological areas might not necessarily be in Israel's best interest, especially since you alluded to, or since you said the nature of the Israel-U.S. relationship is such that if an Israeli firm goes to the U.S. looking for investors and you've got a lot of Chinese, you know, partners on your books or Chinese investments on your books, it's going to be a lot harder to do business in Europe or in the U.S. So it seemed like a pretty complex relationship to me on the tech front, at least.
Absolutely. I think if we would have had this conversation, you know, 5 years ago or 7 years ago, I would have said, you know, China is a huge opportunity in terms of Israeli tech, in terms of investment in Israeli tech. But in recent years, that has become much less exciting or much less realistic in terms of Israeli tech companies for the reasons you mentioned, and especially because of the growing U.S. pressure in that sense. So bilaterally speaking, I think we've seen a natural drop in Chinese investment in Israeli tech. I think if you think about the regional context, the picture is a little bit more complicated because I think you will see more and more Israeli and Chinese companies cooperating on technology in places like the UAE or Saudi Arabia or other places. I think that's something looking ahead that will be interesting to follow.
Right. And just going back to your earlier kind of overview, when you know, that's the Israeli side. On the Palestinian side, the same logic applies. You don't really get a sense of Palestine being incredibly important to China just for the fact of, you know, it's an important community or society or country or whatever, that China's using Palestine, or that there are political goals almost, it sounds like what you're describing is China's using Palestine to achieve something else.
Absolutely. It's about China positioning itself in, you know, in the global south, in the developing world, in the Arab world, you know, using the Palestinian issue as a currency to say the right thing, to position itself in the right place, And like I said, again, I think the issue of Xinjiang is very important as well, because China has been using it to counter Western criticism of its policies over Xinjiang.
So just can you give us a sense, does China have a really, do you believe China's got a very sophisticated understanding and a sophisticated, you know, team of really deeply rooted diplomats, academics, folks who are, thinking about Israel and Palestine, who are informing policy? Is it something that seems important to Beijing, do you think?
No, I don't think the relationship with Israel is particularly important. And I think China's response to the current crisis has made that quite clear. I think if we look at the region at the moment and the way China's views the region, especially over the last 10 years or so, I think Israel has become less important, especially in the last 5 years. Part of that is because of those limitations of technology. So in some ways, from a Chinese perspective, Israel has less to offer to China, and China has more to gain by using the Palestinian issue to attack the United States, because that's a much more important issue. So I don't think China has particular or developed expertise on the Israel-Palestine issue, and I don't think it takes it very seriously or thinks it's very important in a real sense.
Yeah, I've gotten the impression just from watching, from this vantage point here in the Emirates, that I think leaders in Beijing have looked at Israel and realized that the relationship between Israel and the U.S. is such that there's very little space for China to really make serious gains. And that means, hey, if you're not going to be a useful partner, then we can use you as, a way to garner support for other things we're trying to do in the region.
Exactly. I think the Netanyahu visit might have been, an attempt in some ways in Beijing to take advantage of what they thought or what was seen as a crisis in the Israel-U.S. relationship. So Netanyahu was waiting for an invitation to the White House and didn't get it. He got instead an invitation to Beijing, with the Chinese wanting to see what they can work with. And like I said, the Saudi, the issue of Israel-Saudi normalization, I think, was one of the issues that they wanted to explore at that time. Obviously, now following the 7th of October, the reality is quite different. But I think that's the context of that visit at the time.
Yeah. So, okay, well, I want to get to that then, because you mentioned a minute or two ago about China's response to October 7th. Can you just give us, it's been pretty hard to track. There's been a lot happening over the past 6 weeks. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do this, because I know you've obviously got a lot on your plate right now. But what, since October the 7th, what have you seen from China? How has the response been?
So I think generally speaking, China's response was, what we'd expected to do in a way. It's in accordance to what it's done in the past, quite similar to what's done in regards to the war in Ukraine. It's basically trying to present itself as a balanced player, calling for stability, calling for peace, calling for a ceasefire. But in this case, I think there were a few things that were different. One, China refused to condemn or single out or even mention Hamas for the atrocities of the 7th of October. And I think that was different, first of all, because I think it was, it should have done that, but also because from an Israeli perspective, this was Israel's 9/11. So the way Israel saw China's refusal to do so was very different to the way it has seen it in the past, or China's policies in the past. But what we've seen as the war moved forward was that China moved to basically put the blame and criticize Israel. We've seen a greater focus on attacking the United States and criticizing the United States and saying that they're basically enabling the attack of Gaza and the killing of civilians in Gaza. We've seen a campaign on Chinese, both official media and social media, which has been extremely anti-Israel and partially anti-Semitic. And this is something that I see as part of a campaign, domestic campaign in China, to create a very anti-American, anti-Western narrative, but using Israel, again, as you said, as an instrument to achieve that. We saw, unlike, the United States and other many countries in the West that sent their leaders to the region, send the foreign minister to the region. We saw China take a very low-key approach of sending its Middle East envoy, Zai Jun, to the region. And he also visited many countries, but didn't say much, and he didn't visit Israel, which I think is quite telling. And I think that shows two things. One, that China wants to talk the talk. China is happy to make a lot of statements, but is not very interested in taking an active role currently in the conflict. And two, that Israel is not very important for China when it's thinking about the conflict at the moment. China has also been quite clear publicly in saying that it's aligning its position with the Arab world. And I think that's quite interesting. Another interesting element is that China assumed the presidency of the Security Council, UN Security Council, in November. So I think we might see China a bit more active with resolutions, with statements. And the idea is to do two things. One, to show that it's aligned with countries like the UAE, like Saudi Arabia, countries in the BRICS bloc, in the Global South, and two, to try and isolate and attack the United States. And of course, Israel will be part of that as well.
Mm. So with this messaging that China's sending out to everybody, I mean, how's it being perceived in Israel? Like, are people who think about China in Israel surprised by this? Or is anybody really paying attention? Is everybody just so focused on you know, the bigger concern of the war that, you know, what China's saying isn't really penetrating the narrative or the dialogue?
So I think most people were disappointed rather than surprised, right? I think people were expecting, at least on the human level, a warmer reaction. I mean, many people, many Jewish people that visit China have always had a positive, a warm experience. And because this is seen as a 9/11 experience for Israel, a real, you know, tragedy, a real catastrophe, I think people were hoping or expecting China to behave a little bit differently rather than just have this very cold, very cynical calculation when it comes to the tragedy. Whether people were surprised, I don't think they should have been surprised following the trends in recent years. I think, as I said earlier, I think China behaved as you would expect it to behave. I don't think anyone in Israel was hoping or expecting China to come and save Israel, right? To do a United States. But I think it is part of the reason that China's response has seen so negatively in Israel is the contrast to the way the U.S. responded. So on the one hand, we have President Biden sending in, you know, two aircraft carriers within days to the region, coming to the region himself, sending the, you know, the head of the administration to the region and being very involved and very active in supporting Israel. And on the other hand, we have China not even doing the minimum in terms of even of statements, let alone anything else to show sympathy to Israel. So I think that's why we've seen this kind of higher than usual level of disappointment in Israel. And I think this will have an impact on the atmosphere in the relationship between Israel and China. I think it's likely that trade will continue. And as I said, trade between Israel and China is quite high. But I think if people were thinking about some kind of political partnership, if people were thinking that China might be, you know, helpful in regional integration for Israel, I think the lack of trust that is felt now makes that quite unlikely.
Mm. But you don't see it having any impact on the economic side. You imagine trade will continue as is?
Pretty much. I mean, one thing that was on the table is an FTA between China and Israel, and it's been on the table for the last few years and probably not signed because of not wanting to piss off Washington. But I think that won't be signed because Israel now will be feeling that it's not in its interest to push something like that, especially given the relationship with the U.S. But generally speaking, I think the relationship will continue as is. Perhaps less on technology and more on other less sensitive areas.
Well, so you know, with the big trade numbers, and there is quite a lot of contracting in Israel, what is it that China is doing on the economic side? If it's not tech, is it mostly just infrastructure stuff? Or, you know, what are you seeing
China doing? I think the most important element in Chinese investment in Israel is infrastructure. And there was a feeling in Israel that Israel needs both Chinese capabilities and money in order to carry out these infrastructure projects, right? We're talking about ports, we're talking about highways, we're talking about train rails. So I think there was a feeling that Israel needs that in order to meet its goals, in order to make its economy more efficient. And that might continue to an extent. I don't know if we have a different alternative, although it would be interesting to see whether we see more efforts on the Israeli side to find new actors in this field.
Right. So that's interesting because, you know, when you're describing the contrast between, you know, what Israel got from China, what Israel got from the U.S., I mean, of course, we shouldn't be surprised because the relationship with the U.S. is very, very, you know, central. But we do keep hearing these narratives about China as this emerging Middle East power. And then you see its response to a serious crisis has been, you know, quite underwhelming the way you're describing it. You know, does this tell us something, you know, from your perspective about what we can expect from China in the region?
Absolutely. So, you know, we talked about the agreement between the Saudis and the Iranians and the narrative that China has been pushing since then, that it can be a mediator, that it can push, you know, de-escalation in the region in a different way, that it can counter the American presence. And I think what we've seen here might be going the other way. I mean, if you're sitting in Saudi Arabia and you're thinking whether or not a security agreement or security guarantee with the Americans is worth it, when you see the Americans come in within 2 or 3 days with two aircraft carriers, I think that's something that resonates. And on the other hand, you might agree with China's rhetoric about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, but I'm sure that people also know that China isn't doing much to ease the tension. So I think when we look forward in the regional sense, I think people will continue the economic relationships, the economic trends, will deepen cooperation. I think technology and infrastructure, again, will play a big role in the region. But the political narrative might be seen as less realistic in that sense. It also, of course, depends on how things develop with the war, right? Because one of the things I think China is looking to do now is to capitalize on criticism of the U.S. in the region. But if the U.S. manages to wind up the war relatively quickly and to push some kind of political process with the Palestinians, some kind of regional process with Saudi Arabia, you know, initiatives like the India Middle East Economic Corridor, put them back on the table. I think that China could suffer some credit on the political front as well.
Mm. So you mentioned the Saudi-Iran mediation efforts. And you and I have talked about this in the past, so we both have, I think, kind of similar ideas about how, you know, involved China was in that. I mean, I think it's been kind of overblown in a lot of the media accounts of it. But at the same time, you know, China did get them past the finish line, and it was seen as a pretty useful actor. What do you think from an Israeli perspective now, having seen the Chinese government's response and kind of the lackluster, underwhelming, you know, response to this conflict and not a lot of support for Israel? Does China really have much role to play in this mediation effort anymore? Can China be seen as a reliable actor by the Israelis?
So first of all, I agree about the China-Saudi Arabia agreement. I think China was basically getting a lot of credit for being there for the last 50 meters of a marathon. But nevertheless, it is telling that both Saudi Arabia and Iran made a big effort to give the credit to China. So I think that's something to keep in mind. Listen, from Israel's perspective, the first thing that Israel needs to understand, and I think is getting to understand, is that China won't do anything for Israel's sake. Israel's ability to influence Chinese policy bilaterally or regionally is close to zero, including regarding this conflict. So the way to look at it is, so when we're trying to think what kind of role China can play, I think there are two roles. One, and these will be for two reasons, either regional or geopolitical. Two roles that it can play. The first one is that it can pressure or convince Iran not to come in and not to escalate the situation further with other actors like Hezbollah like the Houthis in Yemen and other places, and that might be happening to some degree at least, but I think that's quite an important role that China can play. And I think the second could be to play a role on the humanitarian front, because that's something that China can do without taking much risk, but with getting a lot of credit and a lot of publicity. I mean, I think if you think about, can China mediate peace between Israel and the Palestinians? No, of course not. That would be completely unrealistic. But can China play a role in pressuring Qatar and Egypt into, you know, securing the release of the Israeli and the international hostages held by Hamas? I think it can. Can China help bringing aid or facilitating, you know, aid to Palestinians in Gaza? I think it can. Can China play a role in the future, in the day after, in reconstructing Gaza? I think it can as well. So I think there's some potential roles that China can play in the conflict, but it needs to decide to do so. And so far, we haven't seen any real sign that China really wants to do any of these things. But I think that if China is to do them, now, this week or the next few weeks are the time to do them for several reasons. The first is that we have the meeting between Xi Jinping and President Biden coming up in the next day or so. And that's something that's an opportunity for China to show that it's a positive actor, that it can cooperate with the U.S. The second is the fact that China is currently chair of the U.N. Security Council, president of the U.N. Security Council. The third is regional, and that's the sense that many of its partners in the region, we're not talking about Israel, we're talking about Saudi Arabia, we're talking about the UAE, we're talking about Qatar, are very worried about a spillover. And the fourth is the fact that there's an actual active negotiation now about the release of the hostages in return for a ceasefire. So this is something focused, something specific that theoretically at least China could play a role in.
Yeah, excuse me. I should mention we're recording this. It's November 14th, so there is actually some momentum right now. We're hearing stories about this hostage negotiation happening through Qatar, right? So, you know, it feels like we might be making some positive momentum right now. But I think you made some really important points, because, I mean, when I'm maybe being a little hard on China here, maybe not hard, but I'm, you know, pointing out some of the deficiencies and how people talk about China as a regional actor, but they do have interests in the Middle East and they do have influence. There is space for China to be pretty useful in this. It does have significant interests, and I think I keep saying they're primarily economic interests. So when people expect China to be a security or a political actor, I think they're kind of expecting the wrong thing. But given its deep economic presence here, you know, it doesn't want to see the region. You know, they don't want to see this conflict expand into a region-wide conflict. So I think your point about China's regional influence and how it can act with other actors in the Gulf or in Iran is a point well taken. There's something we could expect that could be useful, and it does align with a lot of other extra-regional powers that have similar concerns and similar interests. So,
exactly. You know, we might see something. We've seen, for example, you know, that the de-escalation, you know, process or trend in the region seems to be continuing. I mean, putting aside the conflict, but we've seen, you know, the Iranians and the Saudis sitting together and the Syrians showing up at the Arab League meeting. And this is a momentum that I think serves Chinese interests. And this is something that they would like to maintain. So I think when we're talking about a Chinese role, we need to be pragmatic and realistic about it. Again, we don't need to say they're not going to save and change the Middle East, but they can definitely have influence on specific issues that are quite critical. If you want to reach a ceasefire on this current war, the key is releasing the hostages, the kidnapped civilians in Gaza. If you manage to do that, you're in a different position. If you manage to have some kind of political horizon, some kind of economic and political horizon for the future of Gaza and the West Bank, even a Palestinian state, that's something that at least theoretically China could play a role, especially on the infrastructure issues, the economic issues, etc., and especially if it's done by countries in the region. So if we can imagine a scenario, for example, where the GCC, you know, the UAE and Saudi Arabia, for example, lead a process of reconstruction in Gaza, you could imagine China wanting to play a role in that as well. So again, as long as we focus on specific and realistic in our approach, I think China could have a role to play. But from a Chinese perspective, it all depends on how beneficial it sees or it thinks it might be for its interest in the region, and also how it portrays it vis-a-vis the U.S. Does it help the U.S.? Does it help China vis-a-vis the U.S.? So I think this is all part of the thinking, very much geopolitical, very much regional.
That's a really great way to wrap it up. I think you gave us a lot to consider. I appreciate it because, I mean, obviously I appreciate you taking time when things are very unpleasant at home, but also just that you've given us a lot to consider. We keep hearing about, I think, these outsized expectations, and I think you're really helping us right-size how we should be thinking about China over here and especially in the current context. Gedalia, thanks so much. I really appreciate it, man.
Thanks so much.
And to our listeners, as always, thanks for joining us. We'll be with you again in a couple of weeks with a new episode. Like, listen, subscribe, and all the other good podcast stuff that we do. Thank you very much.
Produced by Heartcast Media.